Blog.
Oh, ain't you sick? Oh, ain't you sick? Come on.
County folks, you know it's always in Union City. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 14th of March, and as hopefully spring is approaching quickly, folks. Daylight savings time. Obviously, it's great to see it's still daylight after 7 o'clock here, and hopefully warmer days are ahead. And again, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever you are. Here in the Garden State, and of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can register those inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a topic or a guest in the coming weeks and months ahead here on the show, write to me. I love getting email, and I do answer them promptly. So again, politicallydirectnj at yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram as well when it came to, you know, the very popular social media apps not working. But again, listen, I can say I survived the Facebook and Instagram outage of 2019, and I'm sure all of you did too. And again, don't forget to check me out on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Good to see that Twitter was working yesterday throughout the day. So that was, I guess, a sense of relief for a lot of us. And of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment, go to the official page for Politically Direct, click the like button, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, ladies and gentlemen. So call me toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com. Best coverage of the entire political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Once you go on the website, at the very top, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that, and you'll be enrolled free of charge with the morning intelligence briefing. So whether you're having your coffee in the morning, scrolling through the newsfeed on your smartphone or your tablet, or maybe your Mac is nearby, whatever it is you're doing in the morning, maybe watching the morning news shows. I tend to sort of watch the sports shows like, you know, First Things First on Fox Sports, also Undisputed. Maybe I'll check out, you know, First Take on ESPN. But regardless, I'm always going through my phone and checking out the day's headlines. But you know what? When it comes to the best journalism in the state of New Jersey, nobody does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. So check them out again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter and also like them on Facebook. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, of course, the magazine, the journalist, or staff. Folks, again, hope you had a wonderful week. It is certainly, you know, just a nice warm day today. I think it was in the mid-50s today, so for all of us in New Jersey, and it was good to see that hopefully spring is on its way. I don't know about you guys, but I'm so done with snow and ice and cold temperatures. I'm looking forward to warmer days. That means baseball season's upon us. And certainly being able to just be outside and not wear so many layers is something I think we're all, something that I'm not looking forward to, folks, here in New Jersey. And it doesn't really affect me because I don't really care about it in the sense of, you know, a recreational activity. But for a lot of New Jerseyans, it is a big deal. And, you know, when you think about the warmer days, you want to be outside, maybe you want to have a drink, maybe you want to smoke a cigar. And for some New Jerseyans, maybe being outside and smoking a little recreational marijuana might be something you want to do once it's warm in the Garden State. But you know what? If Governor Murphy and the legislature have their way, you'll be paying a lot more for that blunt than you expected. And that's the subject of tonight's First Shot. Well, folks, listen, I don't want to sort of rain it on anyone's parade here, but it was reported this week on various news outlets, certainly Insider and Jay leading the way with this. But, you know, I hate to sort of rain on people's parade, but, you know, I have a question for everybody tonight, and especially for all of you that love to smoke pot. I mean, again, I don't care about it. I've never smoked pot. I don't care to. I'm more of a wine person. So right after the show, I'm going to be like at home having a glass of wine and watching For the People, a great show on ABC. And then probably catching up on Law and Order or whatever else is on TV. But for some people, hey, listen, when you're home from work, it's been a long day, a long week. You know, you want to light up, you want to have, you know, you want to smoke some marijuana. Good for you. Hey, that's what you love. God bless you. But you know, I have a question for everybody here tonight. Like, why would you buy legal marijuana in New Jersey when the state is planning to place a $42 per ounce tax on the stuff? And that just blows my mind. So listen, I'm sure by now you've heard that New Jersey is to legalize marijuana so that adults can buy it for recreational use. So it'll be pretty much just like alcohol, folks, which anyone over 21 in the state can purchase. The only difference is that New Jersey doesn't tax liquor anywhere near as much as it's going to tax marijuana. Now, listen, there's a 12 cents a gallon tax on beer in New Jersey, and for example, an 85.7 cents per gallon tax on wine. So, and you know, and even hard liquor is taxed at the most, you know, $5.50 per gallon. But Trenton wants pot smokers in New Jersey to pay an extra $42 an ounce for the privilege of buying legal marijuana. I don't know about you folks, that kind of drives me crazy. It reminds me of how out of control the taxation mentality is in Trenton. You know, and to be honest, and some of the questions I'm asking myself today is, like, does the state have anyone working for it who knows anything about marketing a product and, you know, competitive pricing? It seems like, you know, these lifelong politicians that are just government workers and maybe have never worked in the private sector before are absolutely clueless and tone deaf on this when it comes to the way to properly market this and tax it. I mean, folks, let's keep in mind for a second. People who don't want to pay the liquor tax can't really find someone, you know, let's say, you know, manufacturing booze in their backyard, right? I mean, and being able to buy booze illegally. I mean, listen, these are not the days of prohibition in the early 1920s, okay? I mean, let's be very honest. I mean, people can't even find, like, a still operator, even in rural parts of New Jersey, okay? And sure, you know what? Maybe there are some elderly residents that are still making some wine in their cellar, and who knows, you know, and that's fine. But, folks, marijuana cellars are all over the place. Now, I don't know where they are personally because I don't smoke marijuana, so I'd be the last person you should ever ask about where to buy marijuana because I don't have no clue. But people who want to join, you know how to get one long before Governor Murphy is going to give his okay on this. And this is, listen, and this, let me be very clear. This is my position on marijuana usage. And if you've heard the show before, which I hope you have, I think you've heard my position be very, very clear. Okay? I don't fall in line with this sort of latest desperate attempt at taxation. I made it very clear that I feel marijuana should be allowed for medical usage. We've all seen what medicine and science tells us about medical marijuana usage, how great it is for pain management, how excellent it is for pain relief. We all know it. The science tells us, medicine tells us. So let's put that debate to rest. You know, there's no, you know, there's no way to argue that. And I know people want to try to find an argument. You can't, you know, and I understand that, you know, maybe some people I still feel inhumane about it, whether or not they want to, you know, legalize it. But the bottom line is that, you know, legalizing marijuana in New Jersey on a recreational level should be, I think, centered around the fact that criminal justice reform should be the first and foremost thing that leads the way in the legislature. Okay? I mean, let's think about this. Okay? All of a sudden, Trenton wants to legalize marijuana and tax it. They feel that, oh, well, benefits will be wonderful for New Jersey. The revenue will raise will be, you know, very beneficial for the state. We've all heard this, folks, whether it's the gas tax or taxing plastic bags or taxing this or taxing that. We all hear how it is entrenched in the legislature. And again, it just seems that one particular party in the legislature is always about taxation and about raising revenues, but then we have to wonder where this revenue is going. And now, to make matters worse, we have a governor in office that really wants to tax everything under the sun, if he can, to try to raise revenue. And folks, listen, here's a couple of things that kind of drive me crazy about this. Because, you know, we've heard in last year's budget, even going into the budget battles now that are going to ensue in the coming weeks, you know, well, maybe we should revisit the millionaire's tax. Folks, there's only a certain amount of millionaires you can tax in New Jersey until they decide to move out of here and say, you know what, we're going to go to Pennsylvania, we'll go to Delaware, we might move down into Maryland or wherever. Staying in New Jersey is just not going to be economically possible. So that's one thing. And what's going to happen is once you're out of millionaires to tax, you're going to have to tax middle class and working class people. That's just the inevitability that is life in New Jersey. Okay. But the idea that $42 an ounce on marijuana is just crazy to me. It is just absolutely crazy. Because what incentive or motivation is anyone going to have to want to buy it legally? If they have a hookup with someone in their neighborhood or their block or someone in the town, whatever the case may be, why not just go through this person? Okay? And if the whole mindset in Trenton is, let's legalize it so we can tax it and we can remove the black market element of marijuana, hey, that's great. That's a commonsensical argument that I can that I'm down with. But folks, when you tax it that high, you're not going to motivate anybody who want to buy this legally. You know what I'm saying? And at that sort of markup price for legal marijuana, I mean, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Street dealers are not only going to stay in business because of this absurd tax rate. You know, once marijuana becomes legal in New Jersey, and again, apparently Trenton and Governor Murphy and the leaders of the legislature are insisting on its $42 an ounce and their cut of the action. Like, can I just be honest with you? Like, are cops in New Jersey going to haul anyone into court for having a few marijuana plants? Let's say among the cucumbers and squash that they're growing in their home garden. I would hope not. And I don't think police departments in New Jersey are going to be about that. You know, I don't think that would happen. But to think that New Jersey is going to get some sort of madness once this tax scheme, like, goes into effect, it boggles my mind as to how inefficient Trenton is. It just boggles my mind, inefficient it is. Because, you know, you have quite possibly a gold mine here, okay? So let's be very honest about something. You know, if you're legalizing it and you're trying to eliminate the black market component of this, you have to make it reasonable. You have to make it competitive in the marketplace. And if you're placing that high of a tax on it, I don't know about you, but if you're a street dealer, you have to be grinning. Like, that smile has to be pretty much expanded from ear to ear tonight when you're reading this in the news. And I don't know about you folks. Again, I don't really have a say in this fight. I don't care about marijuana. I know people love it. I know people like to smoke it. It's therapeutic for them. A lot of people that I know say, hey, Fernando, I'd rather smoke marijuana at home relaxing than having a beer or going out and drinking. I get it. Listen, science is there. Clearly, is marijuana a healthier option for you than alcohol? Yeah, certainly. I think we can make that argument, sir. I think your liver is getting a rest. Okay. But the idea that this tax itself is going to make legal marijuana competitive in New Jersey, it just isn't. I don't know what Governor Murphy's thinking. I don't know what the legislature's thinking, but leave it up to them. Take an idea that has really good prospects and to completely flush it down the toilet. And quite frankly, have it go up in smoke. That's what's happening here in New Jersey. And that, my folks, is the first shot here on Politically Direct. Folks, 818-572-8032. Once again, a toll-free number, 818-572-8032. Again, toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. Check them out, insidernj.com, for the best journalism anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Folks, it is 8:15 here on the East Coast, and it's my pleasure right now to welcome to the program the Deputy Mayor of Mendham Township in New Jersey and the President of Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey, a first-timer here on the show. Let's welcome the great Sarah Nabar to Politically Direct. Sarah, how are you, sweetie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I hope you like that intro. I try to give all my guests a very nice sort of like
WWE. I have to say, that was one hell of an intro. Thanks so much.
Oh, well, you know, listen, thank you for coming on the show tonight. Sarah, listen, there's a lot to talk about here. I know you're a little under the weather, so I'm going to try to make this as pleasant as possible for you. don't know how much you had to listen to my opening monologue, but, you know, politics in New Jersey, especially in Trenton and the legislature, you know, it never ceases to amaze me with Governor Murphy and I think with Democrats that are the leaders in the state legislature. And, you know, I don't really care about marijuana because I don't smoke it. I never have. It doesn't interest me. But to think that there's an idea here on the table where you can, A, eliminate the black market element of marijuana selling, B, you can hopefully use some of this revenue to better our school districts, to help our infrastructure, and leave it up to Governor Murphy and the legislature to think of this asinine $42 an ounce tax rate for legal marijuana. If I'm a street dealer, Sarah, I have to be glowing tonight because I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm not going out of business. Why would anybody want to buy this stuff legally? And it just reminds me of how tone deaf Trenton is about these issues, Sarah. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think you you summarized it pretty well. The Murphy administration, you know, it is just out of touch. It's not transparent, and it's continuously getting messier by the day. And you know, you're right. You know, I know that there was conversations, and you know, I wasn't very much involved in this, but I've just been hearing it from, you know, some lobbyists and volunteers I know that, you know, work on this issue, and they were trying to strike a balance about, you know, how much they would tax it to, you know, be able to eliminate the black market. And it just seems that they haven't struck that chord. Additionally, you know, the idea that, you know, I would love for, you know, the revenue that we get from taxing marijuana to go to offset property taxes and taxes, but why should we trust the Murphy administration? They tax everything, and they continue to raise our taxes, and, you know, nothing's going back to the residents of New Jersey. People keep leaving the state, and they do nothing about the affordability crisis. So it's very hard for me to trust the Murphy administration on this, but we'll see what happens.
Listen, I'm with you completely, and I appreciate your insight on this because it's so disenchanting and disheartening for me as a homeowner and a taxpayer, same as you, Sarah, that the governor, and again, you know, listen, it's funny when I talk to people off the air, whether it's locally here in Hudson County or throughout the state, there were very big Murphy fanatics in the summer of 2017 going into fall. And the thing I always laugh about is, you know, you read comments on social media, you talk to people off the air, and sort of people sort of have a buyer's remorse about Governor Murphy. And I always tell people, I'm like, listen, you know what? He ran on a specific platform, and he didn't lie to you. Like, everything he's doing,
yeah,
he told you he was going to do. So it's not like he was deceitful and said, hey, by the way, I'm not going to raise taxes. No, he said, damn well, I'm going to raise every tax I can on you if possible to sort of fill budget holes or whatever. And it just seems that why, you know, and I brought this up to the last couple of guests I've had on these previous weeks where, I think it was a Monmouth poll, Sarah, a couple of weeks ago where Governor Murphy's approval rating was at 40%. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know who the hell they polled. I don't know if it was family members. I don't know if it was illegal. I don't know if it was like cabinet members or cousins. That's a ridiculously high approval rating for the governor. How is anyone giving this guy a good approval rate? I mean, listen, Sarah, 43%, I mean, it's not great because it's under 50%, but that's still too high for me with the job that
you're
in office. It's awful. When you saw that poll, what did you think about it?
You know what? I was reading the comments of the poll, and I totally agree with you. I thought it was way too high, you know, for the people that I'm around and the people that I talk to. You know, they do not approve of what Governor Murphy is doing. But you're also right that he campaigned on all of this. He said he was going to raise taxes. And I know there was a debate of how much he would raise taxes, but I remember being on the campaign. I was, you know, working on Kim Giordano's campaign at the time. And I believe, you know, we said that he was going to raise taxes. I forget what number it was, but his campaign actually said, oh, no, we're not going to raise taxes that much. We're only going to raise it, you know, by 1.3 billion dollars or, you know, and it was kind of like crazy. It's like, what are you going to do? And so it was, you know, it's almost like they clarified that they were raising taxes and they were proud of it. And, you know, he keeps continuously doing this. And it's, you know, I'm not surprised, but when it comes down to it, something needs to stop. And, you know, it's just also surprising to me that there's legislators that, you know, follow his lead and continuously, you know, vote with his objectives. And, you know, something has to stop. You know, people can't afford to live here. And I know as a municipal elected official, I'm doing everything I can to keep the cost on my residents low. But every elected official needs to do that. Every elected official needs to realize that their responsibility is to not raise taxes on their residents or constituents. We just can't afford this anymore. And it's just really upsetting that I see people in Trenton that don't care. And they just kind of, every day, it's, you know, what am I going to tax today? And it's just disgusting.
No, listen, you're absolutely right on that. And what's even more disheartening, well, let me rewind for a second. I think I'm somewhat optimistic when I hear that, you know, State Senate President Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Coughlin are maybe trying to maybe handcuff the governor a little bit when it comes to the tax mentality the governor has. I mean, again, you know, it's budget season, and we'll find out leading up to, you know, June 30th when the budget, you know, constitutionally has to be signed into law. Otherwise, we'll have another state shutdown again. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how much more Coughlin and Sweeney will be butting heads with the governor. I mean, again, I can't believe I would be saying that, you know, we're relying on State Senate President Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Coughlin to sort of be the voice of reason in this, because we know that we can, you know, sort of go after them in the sense of how their record's been on taxes in New Jersey for some time. So it's kind of interesting. But we'll get back to the governor in a minute. Sarah, and one of the things for my audience tonight that I'm not sure if they're familiar with, but, you know, you've been very involved in state politics for a while. Certainly you've been heavily involved in Republican politics for some time, as you mentioned, campaigning and working on the campaign for Lieutenant Governor Kim Godin. I know you were an advocate and working on the campaign for Bob Hugin last year as he was running for the U.S. Senate. And I'll sort of throw this scenario at you, Sarah, because I threw it at state GOP chair Doug Steinhardt, who was on a few weeks ago here. And it's really hard to be a Republican in New Jersey. It just is. It has been for some time. And it certainly is frustrating, I think, because New Jersey, you know, notoriously has always been a very bluish type of purplish state. I mean, it has not gone red in a Republican, in a presidential election, I believe since Reagan, if I'm not mistaken. Actually,
yeah.
Maybe not.
Oh, no, actually, I might have been,
George,
I think there was one
afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably 88 with George H.W. Bush, God rest his soul. But New Jersey's been notoriously very blue. It keeps electing Democrats in the U.S. Senate, as we've seen. Obviously this past November, we saw sort of a blue tsunami that took over the state when it came to congressional districts, and all but one remained Republican. And it's interesting to me because, you know, with the amount of issues affecting New Jersey, it's the highest property taxes in the country. Spending is still taking place at absurd rates. I grow frustrated with the Republican Party, Sarah, because, you know, a lot of the rhetoric we hear in recent elections is, well, New Jersey's expensive. New Jersey is unaffordable. It's got the highest property tax in the nation. But for some reason, Sarah, that in the last few cycles, we keep hearing Democrats sort of hijack the message of, well, you know, it's Washington's fault that New Jersey's expensive. And I hate to break it to people tonight. This goes beyond President Trump. This goes beyond President Obama. This goes beyond even President George W. Bush. The problem is Trenton. The problem is not Washington. And I don't know why the NJGOP hasn't done a better job in trying to convey that message. Because at the end of the day, the reason we have the highest property taxes is not, you know, the problem doesn't lie at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The problem lies in Trenton. And why people aren't making that distinction concerns me here in New Jersey politics. So I just want to get your thoughts on that, Sarah.
No, believe me, like everything you brought up is some things I talk about all the time, so I very much appreciate it. Again, I apologize that I'm a little under the weather, but and let me know if you can't hear me. But, no, you're right. As Republicans in New Jersey, or specifically in the Northeast, you know, our pathway to victory especially in this current political climate, is to make campaigns and elections about local issues. And that's, you know, I know Bob Hugin didn't win, but that is what we tried to do. And of course, you know, there's a variety of factors of why, you know, last year was a bad year for Republicans, but I truly believe, like, that is the pathway to victory going forward. As you said, you know, there's 900,000 more Democrats than Republicans in New Jersey, and, you know, that's, you know, something that we have to change. It's not just a voter registration issue. It's a cultural issue. It's a voting issue. It's how people decide to affiliate themselves in a partisan way, what their values are, what they deem priorities of importance in voting. And so it's something that we really need to get into individualized communities. We need to start relationship building. We need to start, you know, getting our message to people who are not traditional Republican voters. And I think that's very, very important. Again, yes, we are the highest property taxes in the country. And that's for a variety of issues. But like you said, a lot of them are, you know, start entrenched. There are unfunded mandates. There are red tape issues. We have issues with the school funding formula, et cetera. And a lot of it is also how our tax system was made. And so there are things that, you know, we need to do a better job informing and communicating to voters. And, you know, that is kind of similar to, you know, why I actually started Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey, you know, a couple years ago, is because when you poll in New Jersey, the number one issue is property taxes. And then you poll policy solutions to that, and people don't believe that you can lower your taxes. They just don't believe it. They believe, you know, living in New Jersey, you're going to have high taxes. And, you know, that's not fair. We owe more to our citizens and our residents. And so I thought it was very important to inform people why their property taxes are highest in the nation. Start really a conversation of actual policy solutions that we can do moving forward, and also offer the constituent resources that our legislators and our governors are not offering, and that is information on the tax bill process, making sure people are filling out their senior freeze applications appropriately, homestead rebate information. And, you know, that's something with our organization. I know you've spoken to Brian Thomas, he's my executive director. That's what it does, and I think it's been very beneficial. But, you know, like, we have a lot to do, and I just feel like people have kind of lost sight of that.
Listen, you know, you're absolutely right on it, and shout out to Brian. He was a great guest when he was on last year with me, so shout out to him. And certainly, folks, if you just joined us right now here live on Blog Talk Radio, the president of Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey, you can check him out at www.fairpropertytaxesforallnewjersey.com. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at FairPropTaxNJ. Also like them on Facebook. And also I'm speaking with tonight the Deputy Mayor of Mendham Township here in New Jersey, the great Sarah Nabart, joins us here on Politically Dirt. Sarah, you bring up great points here, specifically with the organization. And it's one of the things I think that's really frustrating, I think, for New Jerseyans to try to listen to, is the fact that, you know, we have the highest property taxes in the country. Certainly the math is not on our side. But one of the things that really, I think, frustrates me, I think, as a homeowner and a taxpayer as well, is the idea that for some reason, you know, the notion of whether or not we should consolidate municipalities in New Jersey and how that's sort of looked down upon. And I'll be very honest with you. I think that that would probably be one of the better solutions, I think, in trying to sort of fix the cluster blank. You know, I have to keep the show PG here, but sort of the cluster blank that exists in Trenton. And more specifically, I think the way we look at property taxes statewide, I mean, is that something that, like, do you feel that would be a good policy initiative to sort of pursue in Trenton in terms of consolidating municipalities statewide?
Yeah, so, you know, I know that is a policy proposal. I know the Path to Progress organization has looked into that. You know, Senator Sweeney, Senator Oroho, as well as their whole group has looked into these things. I know, you know, Senator Gopal as well. And I do think it's something that you need to examine. It definitely needs to be part of the conversation. I don't necessarily agree that it should be mandated by Trenton, because I don't think anything that's mandated by Trenton ever turns out well for municipal governments. And as an elected official in a municipality,
that's true.
You know, I think there needs to be a partnership with the municipality. But, you know, as somebody from Mendham Township, like, I'll be the first to say that long term, I think it is very important for Mendham Township and Mendham Borough to become one town. You know, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It might not happen the next couple years, but eventually it should happen. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, elected officials are scared to say stuff like that, and I'll be the first one to say that I would happily not be an elected official. I would happily eliminate my job as deputy mayor if that meant that the towns consolidated into one and merged. I just think it's really important. I think it's something that we need to be cutting costs. We need to be realizing the burden that we put on our taxpayers. And it's just, you know, going to be more efficient. Also, when we talk about schools, there are, you know, there are definitely places that there should be consolidation in schools or regionalization, and I think that definitely needs to be on the table. And it might not be appropriate in every municipality, but it's going to be inappropriate in many of them, and it needs to be on the table. It needs to be looked at. I think to just kind of push it to the side and not talk about it is definitely something that shouldn't be done. Like, we need to constantly be talking about it. And the reason, you know, I'm again, really passionate about this, and I think it all starts with sharing services, and it all starts on the local level and having that intermunicipal communication. And that's something that, you know, when I was appointed last year, I really took seriously, and I actually made the Ad Hoc Shared Services Committee of, you know, West Mars County and part of Somerset County to kind of all the bordering municipalities around Mendham Township, because I think it is very important for all of the municipalities, especially in small municipalities like mine, to be communicating. We should be talking about the equipment we're purchasing, the services we're providing to our residents, things that we can be sharing. So, you know, if I'm, you know, buying, you know, a, you know, fire truck this year, maybe, you know, the municipality next to me is not buying one until, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, et cetera. You know, we have this DPW shared services agreement that talks about equipment sharing. And that's really important because, you know, that there are savings and costs there. So I think all of these things need to be on the table for discussion, and it's really time to start taking these issues seriously.
Do you think, Sarah, that ultimately, and one of the things that is interesting about 2019 is, you know, coming up this November, you know, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs, and coming up with that distinction, you know, leading up to that, you know, certainly now with this year's budget, that's going to be heavily scrutinized. I mean, I think this is quite honestly an opportunity, I think, for all us 80 assembly men and women collectively to be put under the microscope, you know, and leading up to the budget battles and what's voted on as a final budget. I mean, I think this is, you know, certainly an element of their record, I think, that has to be, you know, held up to scrutiny. And do you think at any point in time, and I know, again, you're very heavily involved in Republican politics, I know you've been involved in recent campaigns, but does it seem like maybe this year with some of the disenchantment that exists with the climate in New Jersey and sort of some of the disenchantment with Governor Murphy to some extent, do you think realistically this is a chance where Republicans statewide can maybe steal an assembly seat or two? Because I'll tell you right now, that hasn't happened in quite some time, and even when I had, you know, NJGOP Chairman Steinhardt on a few weeks ago, I was very, very transparent in, you know, in the 8 years of Chris Christie, and listen, I had a chance to meet the governor. He was a nice guy to me. I mean, certainly there isn't a lot we see eye to eye on. I mean, other than being, like, devoted Cowboys fans, that's really, I can't think of anything else I really see eye to eye on with Governor Christie. But in my opinion, I think he did a real disservice to the state Republican Party. And I'm not shy about saying that publicly. I've gone on record saying it multiple times. I've said it to elected officials here on the show. I said it to Chairman Steinhardt. I'll continue saying it. I think that, you know, 10 years ago when Governor Christie got elected, you know, on this sort of mandate of cleaning up Trenton, that was fantastic. But we all saw pretty much at the start of his second term where that all went to, you know what, blank. And I think that, you know, he did not irreparable harm to the Republican brand in New Jersey, Sarah, but I think he did serious harm. And I don't know if Republicans statewide are ready to sort of take the mantle. I know Chairman Steinhardt is. I know he's very energetic. He was a great guest. I'm looking forward to having him on again later in the spring. But is this a time, you think, where maybe Republicans can look and maybe send some seats this November?
Yeah, I think what – things that you just identified are really important conversation topics to have. And I know at the NJGOP summit the other week, people are talking about these things. You know, Bob Hugin last year, you know, created this excitement and hope that, you know, we had not seen in a couple of years. And I really think it needs to be transferred to, you know, the rest of the Republican Party. And, you know, I am hopeful for 2019. You know, I've heard, you know, the districts that the Democrats are targeting, but I truly believe we have some awesome candidates on the Republican side. I think Michael Testa in LD1, who's going for the Senate seat, I think that's an awesome opportunity. I think he has a real chance. I think LD1 always, LD2, LD38, there's some awesome candidates running. You know, there is some millennials, which is great, and I'm really excited about. You know, LD16 is always going to be a competitive district, which, you know, we also have some great candidates running. We have also some very important seats to be defending this year because, you know, just seeing how close the assembly races were 2 years ago. So I think it's going to be a very important election for Republicans this year. We do have some great pickup opportunities, but we also have to defend some very important districts. And, you know, when it comes down to it, it's going to be about message, infrastructure, organization, and, you know, the thing that, you know, a lot of candidates don't like to talk about, but, you know, raising money. It's very, very important. And, you know, that's the pitch that I'll give is that, you know, every dollar counts, and it's just very important, you know, to, like, if you can give, if you have an opportunity to give, to, you know, give to your, you know, local candidates, give to your assembly candidates, so, you know, that money goes a long way so they can, you know, get their message out, because that's really important. And, you know, the Democrats are coming out with a lot of money against Republicans. And, you know, we have some great candidates. We have a great message. And, you know, I just want to make sure that we're putting our Republican candidates in the best possible situation so they can win.
Now, very much, you know, and I've said this before, very much in the way that we look at Democrats differently, I think we could say the same about Republicans, Sarah, where, you know, listen, if you're a Democrat up here in Hudson County or Bergen County, it's very different than how they're viewed in Central and South Jersey. And I think that even if you're a moderate Republican up in, you know, let's say, northern Jersey, it's very different than those down the shore or in South Jersey. What are some, you know, I mean, I think statewide, I mean, what are some of the messages I think that you hope can resonate in some of these assembly districts when it comes to, you know, coming up this November, where, again, as I said, you know, it's funny, when I was on NJTV recently, we were talking about, you know, very different Democrats where, yes, there's a letter D next to Steve Sweeney's name and Craig Coughlin's name and then Phil Murphy's name, but they're fundamentally very different Democrats, I think, in some regards. I mean, I think at the end of the day, they still sort of share some common themes. But even statewide, I think that, you know, and I'll sort of use this as an example. I mean, he's a buddy of mine. He's been on the show last year. I'm sure you're familiar with Matt Rooney, the publisher of Save Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been that sort of constant conservative voice in New Jersey for over 10 years now. But, you know, he's a very sort of different conservative than, let's say, Republicans that are running in districts, let's say, in North Jersey. Do you think that could be a problem for candidates running, you know, for those seats coming up this November where maybe there isn't sort of a concise message among, let's say, Republican candidates?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, messaging is always something that could be, you know, tricky district by district, and that, you know, everyone has to, you know, look at their campaign and look at the issues that are particular to that district and kind of craft messaging on that. But I would say messaging that resonates across the board, regardless of whatever district you're in New Jersey, is affordability. You know, people are leaving the state because they can't afford to live here anymore. And it's something that it doesn't matter what part of New Jersey you're from, we need candidates that are talking about it. So if every candidate, every Republican candidate on the ballot talked about affordability, I think that would resonate very, very well. I think also transparency in government. Right now we have the Murphy administration that you could tell is not transparent. It's messy. The hiring practices are questionable. The culture in the administration is questionable. And so that is something I think that would also resonate in many of the districts, regardless of if they're North, South, Jersey.
You know, I'm glad you brought up hiring practices, Sarah. And I want to hear your thoughts, certainly as not only as an elected official, But as a woman in New Jersey, and this is a point that I brought up, this was back in January when I was on Reporters Roundtable with Michael Aaron on JTB, and it happened to be a day that they were airing some of the hearings during this really unfortunate situation taking place between Katie Brennan and Al Alvarez. And I brought up this point on the air, and I was nervous that they might get it out in the final cut. It ended up, airing on the episode. But, one of the things that was interesting to me about the hearings, leading up to it, and I'm a political junkie, Sarah, which I'm sure you are as well, and you watch these with a lot of interest. But, I brought up the point that, last fall, many Democrats statewide, starting with the governor, starting with the junior United States senator, the bombastic one, Cory Booker, and other Democrats statewide, along with Democrats nationally, were up in arms and were having, tantrums and fits on television, if any camera possible, about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings for his confirmation to the Supreme Court. We started seeing this poor man's reputation being dragged through the mud. We started seeing, again, many Democrats in New Jersey going in front of a camera saying, hey, we need to let the FBI investigate this. Hashtag believe women. Hashtag believe Blasey Ford. Hashtag believe women always. And we saw every hashtag under the sun, Sarah. It came to believing women and to give credibility to victims of sexual assault, not just women, but also men. And we saw every Democrat in the world go in front of a camera and just, be engaging hyperbole and everything else. And now, many months later, at the start of the hearings, and now we're seeing what's happened to Katie Brennan in New Jersey. And I said on the air, you can hear a pin drop in the state, Sarah, with the collective silence from Democrats that don't want to be bothered giving an opinion about the Katie Brennan situation. We've seen that this week with Al Alvarez appearing before the legislature and the committee, talking about hiring practices and talking about sort of this climate. And I said this on the air back in January, and I'll keep saying it. What kind of message does this send to victims of sexual assault, both women and men, in New Jersey, when last fall, September around there, it seemed like it was politically convenient to go after the president nominee for the Supreme Court. But now when here in Blue, New Jersey, when we're seeing a case that, and listen, and Sarah, we're never going to know what happened that night. We've seen the videotapes of Katie Brennan's interview with the prosecutor's office. We've seen Al Alvarez's interview. We've seen testimony. We've seen back and forth. The bottom line is we're not seeing anyone rally, sit down in Trenton where we're seeing hashtag believe Katie Brennan, hashtag believe Katie, hashtag investigate Phil. You know what? No offense, but again, I'm not trying to minimize the damage of Bridgegate, but look at the hysteria that we saw over Bridgegate. Why aren't we seeing the same sort of hysteria over what clearly, Sarah, are some really questionable hiring practices in New Jersey? Why isn't there enough? I mean, I know the answer, but I know that you know the answer, but I'm hoping you'll just sort of say publicly for me, why the double standard?
You know what? I don't know why there is a double standard. To be totally honest, it's disgusting that there is a double standard. It's hypocritical. It's so unfortunate that, people, are trying to politicize an issue and a situation that is incredibly unfortunate and upsetting. I'm actually a victim and a survivor of a sexual assault as well. And it's just very upsetting to me that, people would try to politicize it as well as, be hypocritical and not, genuinely try to get to the bottom of a situation because of any political reason. And it's just very upsetting to me.
No, it really is. And I'm sorry to hear, I was not aware of those circumstances, Sarah, and you're brave to talk about it. And I think, listen, you're certainly an inspiration for listeners tonight, and I hope that many others tuning in this evening will certainly gather the courage as well to be as bold as you are. But it's just disappointing. It just seems like this political climate, Sarah, in New Jersey, it's just toxic. And again, I'm not trying to engage in hyperbole tonight because people might say, well, Fernando's, being bombastic or throwing bombs tonight. No, I don't think I am. I just think I'm trying to sort of speak to the heart here about what a lot of residents in New Jersey are just upset about, whether it's taxes, as you mentioned, the cost of living, you know, and going back to your organization, I mean, one of the things I found really interesting about Fair Property, folks, if you haven't checked it out, it's a wonderful website. It's very user-friendly. Check it out, www.fairpropertytaxesforallnewjersey.com. I mean, the resources on this website are just unbelievable. So if you're really not sure exactly how taxation works and you want more answers or you want some lifeline, believe me, they're a great organization. So when you go on the website, folks, you know, sign up for their updates. Believe me, I do. They're very informative, and you'll certainly be learning a lot. But going back to your organization, Sarah, when did you develop the epiphany to start this nonprofit? You know, what sort of factors went into your decision making in creating Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. Yeah, it happened a couple of years ago. I think I briefly mentioned it earlier, but, you know, I was on a campaign and, you know, we were polling and we were, you know, asking folks, what's the number one issue in New Jersey? And I'm sure everyone who's listening in tonight, as well as you, can, you know, guess that it's property taxes. And so, you know, after you ask that question in a poll, you then, you know, give a bunch of different policy solutions to, you know, combat high property taxes. And no one, you know, every time we would survey, every time we would poll, every time we were in a focus group, no one ever believed that any of the policy solutions would work, that their property taxes would ever be lowered. And that really got me thinking. It's, you know, you live in New Jersey and you're just going to expect to pay high property taxes. You know, that is unfair. You know, that's ridiculous. Like, why would people want to stay here? Why would people want to live here if that's the case? And so I really try to get to the bottom of it because, you know, why was New Jersey, you know, the highest property taxes in the state? Why is it, actually? It's currently still has the highest property taxes in the state. And so it was, you know, something myself and a couple other colleagues of mine created this organization. And, you know, we decided that it was very much, very important to educate people why their property taxes are the highest in the country, what factors goes into property taxes, because to be totally honest, even, you know, politically savvy in the know people don't really understand property taxes. And so I thought it was very important to make sure that our elected officials and, you know, our politicos, of course, understood why property taxes were the way they are and, you know, how they have come to where they are, but also how, you know, have our residents be educated on that and, you know, who is actually responsible for increasing property taxes or, you know, making the property tax levy, what factors go into that, and also resources to either, you know, file a tax appeal or, you know, sign up for some of the property tax relief programs. And it's been really interesting getting the conversation and hearing the conversations that are happening regarding property taxes. You know, I'm sure you've seen on online and in the news about some referendums that we're going through about, you know, increasing property taxes or, you know, monies going to either, you know, school boards or other projects that would increase the property tax levy that actually recently got voted down. And, you know, it's very encouraging to see that, you know, people are taking this issue seriously. People are voting, you know, with their pocketbooks. I think that's very important, especially as they get more information. And, you know, I just want to, like, really, you know, be part of that conversation. I know our organization has very much enjoyed being part of the conversation with some of the other groups that are, you know, looking into, you know, solutions regarding the affordability crisis in New Jersey. And, you know, that's, you know, we're trying to be a resource. We're here. We're always looking for more ideas, opinions, and, you know, we're very responsive. And if you ever have any questions, we're happy to help.
Now, Sarah, obviously you're very busy between being a public official, certainly coordinating this organization. Is there any thought in the future about running for office? I mean, whether it's maybe not necessarily one of the assembly seats up for grabs this November, but is that something you've seriously sat down and examined as perhaps a goal of yours to either pursue an assembly seat or a state senate seat or maybe even higher? I mean, you know, what are your thoughts about, you know, continuing to sort of run for other public office?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about it. I haven't come to, you know, any decisions on that. You know, I think it's just really important to have people who are cognizant of, you know, the affordability crisis. And, you know, I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a former elected official, and I told them that I was, like, very frustrated because I feel like, you know, legislators and school board members and sometimes even, like, local government elected officials like to kind of just blame that they inherited a system or inherited, you know, a budget that, like, they didn't make, and, like, they're kind of just making decisions where they think is best for now. And I said, you know, that's, you know, it's okay, I guess, but at the same time, as a leader, you know, leading's hard and governing is hard, and you have to make tough decisions. And if you're going to be an elected official in New Jersey, you have to be willing to, you know, step up and make decisions that are not always going to be popular. And you're gonna have to make some hard decisions. And if, you know, I know I'm personally willing to make those hard decisions. Last year, I voted against, I was the only member of my township committee to vote against our budget because we were increasing property taxes. And I'm not, you know, prepared to increase property taxes of the residents of Mendham Township. They're already taxed too much. And so, you know, I'm on our finance committee this year, and I'm working to make sure that we have at least a 0% increase. Hopefully we have a decrease, but I'm getting a lot of pushback from some of my committee members on that. And so, you know, if they all decide to vote for a budget that has an increase in it, I'm going to vote against it. And, you know, it's something that I truly believe in, and we need more people in Trenton and on the federal level and in the governor's office and even on the, you know, local and freeholder level that are going to say the same things. And I just think that we're at a point where we just cannot afford this anymore, and we really need to make some drastic changes.
Now, Sarah, in terms of sort of understanding the dynamics of property taxes, whether it's in your township or statewide, and again, in terms of, you know, you being at the head of the organization, and I'm sure you've had some workshops or symposiums or, you know, town halls of some kind, and you've talked to taxpayers, you know, throughout the state, what's sort of been the biggest dynamic that you've had to overcome? Like, what's sort of the biggest misconception or, you know, that you've had to really clarify for residents when you've gone to either, again, symposiums or workshops, and you've sat down with homeowners and taxpayers and try to explain to them the complexities of property taxes? You know, what have been some of the biggest challenges for you lately in trying to, you know, have a conversation with people, let's say, in any capacity, whether, regardless of political party they're registered to, what ideology they subscribe to? What are some of the biggest challenges you face as the president of the organization when you sat down with people?
Yeah, I definitely think it's, you know, people don't realize that 80% of, you know, the property tax levy is for, you know, it's specifically in my town, it's probably similar, you know, across the state as well. But 80% is, you know, goes to schools. and, you know, 20% is really like the municipal taxes. And so I think that is something that people don't realize off the bat. I think additionally is that there's a lot of, you know, statutory obligations in a municipal budget that we have to, you know, abide by. And that also increases taxes. Also, you know, pension costs, you know, health care benefits, things that, you know, are in contracts that because of, you know, previously negotiated contracts that, you know, we have to, you know, pay every year. And so there's just a lot of dynamics like that go into the budget. You know, additionally, there's different levels of government that tax you for different things. And so breaking those down is also really important to people. And it's just, you know, it's very complex. You know, different states do it different ways. And, you know, how our tax code was created, I don't, you know, it was kind of a funky system. But, you know, it just takes time to kind of go over it with folks. And I truly believe, you know, as more people become more knowledgeable about it, I think that there will be change down the road. It might be, you know, slow, but I truly think that people are kind of fed up and, you know, they just can't afford it anymore. And, you know, like, we need people to stay in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. I want to stay here. I want to live here. My whole family is here. A lot of my friends are here. And, you know, it's something just has to change.
Now, moving forward, obviously, as you mentioned earlier in the program, Sarah, that the, you know, all 80 assembly seats are for grabs. I know that you're very heavily involved in Republican politics. It's still 2 years away, but, you know, at the rate we're going, whether it's taxing maybe the rain or the air, who knows? I mean, that's probably next year with Governor Murphy. any Republicans you kind of think about that perhaps in 2 years you can say, you know what, it might be difficult. It might be like almost swimming upstream. But this is a Republican or two that I'd keep my eye on, because if Governor Murphy's vulnerable, this is someone that could sneak in and beat Governor Murphy in November of 2021. Anyone you care to sort of like drop a name on tonight and say, you know what, I've been following him or her and his or her career and his or her work, and you know what, if this person ran, this person could give Governor Murphy a run for his money. Anybody you can sort of share with us tonight?
Yeah, I think it's, to be totally honest, you know, what I've learned about politics, specifically in New Jersey, is that, you know, things can change so quickly. You know, something I say tonight could be totally different in a week from now. So, you know, I think we all know the obvious names of people who've been thrown out there. You know, that there's Jack Chitterelli, there's Kim Guadagno, there's Doug Steinhardt, there's Sean Golden, there's Leader Bramnick, Tom Kane, Tom MacArthur. You know, we've heard all these names. But, you know, they are all really good alternatives to Governor Murphy. you know, I'm just really hoping that, you know, the Republican Party can come together in New Jersey and put a candidate up and be united, because that's really what we need. We all need to, you know, come together. The Democrats are always united. They have their, you know, arguments behind closed doors, and then they're united. We need to be united, and we need to be one party and move forward. And so, you know, I'm really excited to see what the future has in store. I'm unfortunately, you know, I don't know what the future is yet, but, you know, I'm excited to see what happens with the Republican Party in the next few years.
Listen, and speaking of the Republican Party in the next few years, certainly, obviously, on our radar is next year. 2020 is a big year, certainly. I know that, you know, again, you were a deputy campaign manager for Bob Huggins' campaign last year for the U.S. Senate, so I know that the national scene is something you keep an eye on. And I've sort of conveyed this point, Sarah, and I'll see if you agree with it, or maybe you want to add to it, or maybe take away from it. But I look at 2020 this way, and a lot can happen from March 14th, 2019 till March 14th of next year. But if we see the economy at its current pace, which is good growth, we're seeing job creation in different sectors of the country, we're seeing record unemployment for women, for blacks, for Hispanics, we're seeing certain, let's say, foreign policy initiatives taking place, whether it's the weakening of ISIS overseas. You know, when I look at the president's chances next year for re-election, obviously incumbents have a great advantage, you know, short of, you know, Jimmy Carter and George H.W. Bush. I mean, incumbents, for the most part, have a pretty good advantage, and they tend to win. And the economy, again, unless there's some sort of catastrophe and the economy tanks, which doesn't look like it's going to. Now, again, I'm not an economist. I mean, my graduate degrees are in economics, but I think I know enough to see that I don't foresee that. But if the economy stays the way it does, and we're seeing this sort of very radical movement to the left in the Democratic Party, it almost seems like a moderate Democrat is almost like extinct now. And we're seeing more and more of the Democratic Party, not just statewide in New Jersey, but nationally, moving very much to the left. If that's the case, and I know that a lot of people look at the president and don't like him as a person, but from a governing perspective, you know, I would make the argument that the president's chances of being reelected are pretty good based on what I just outlined. How do you see it?
You know, it's unbelievable, you know, everything that's going on in the Democratic primary right now. It just seems that they keep going, just like you said, more and more left. And, you know, just seeing, you know, how the Republican Party, how the Democratic Party has, you know, you know, embraced this, these anti-Israel sentiments, you know, has allowed a member of Congress to continuously, you know, say anti-Semitic tropes. You know, it's just disgusting to me, you know, what's going on with the Democratic Party nationally. And, you know, looking at the primary field for Democrats, you know, every day just gets more and more entertaining what's going on. So, you know, I'm, you know, looking forward to seeing how everything unravels in the next few months. But, you know, we'll have to see. You know, it's just kind of unbelievable how left the Democratic Party has gotten.
Well, it has, and it's scary because, listen, and I'm someone, Sarah, and again, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to quiz you here. I mean, this is probably the educator in me now coming out. But, I mean, I'm a guy that's an independent. You know, I tend to be center right, I think, on most issues. I think when it comes to economic issues, you know, I don't like to subscribe to some of these terms of, like, well, conservative or liberal or progressive. I feel that on economic issues, I have a pretty responsible look on the way we should manage economics. And I think on social issues a lot, I think I tend to be reasonable. I don't like that label of, oh, well, you know, you're a liberal or progressive on. No, I'd like to think I'm reasonable. I like to employ common sense and rational thinking to the way I look at policy, Sarah. But it just seems to me that someone that's in the middle, like myself, and I know some of my friends on social media might say, well, Fernando's more conservative than he admits, or some friends might say, well, he's a little more progressive than he admits. But the bottom line is that I know where I stand, and, you know, I'm very much center-right, but I'm willing to have a conversation, Sarah, with people on the other side, people who are – listen, I'm in academia. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, I have colleagues that are so conservative, they think I'm a socialist. And, you know, I know that you don't know me very well, but if you take a look at my social media, I think you can decipher that I'm not a socialist, for example. But on the other side, I have colleagues in academia that are very far left, that are almost radically left, and look at me and say, well, Fernando's sort of a crazy conservative. And I'm like, well, that's not me either. It just seems like we're losing that capacity in today's political climate to have conversations. I know people want to sort of lay blame on the president, but I think that this lack of civility predates the president. I think this has been going on for quite some time. I think social media, I think, has enabled this to some extent. And it's a concern for me, not just as an academic, but as someone who, I guess, I'm media, for whatever you want to call it, for what I do with Insider NJ. It's just concerning to me that it seems that there's a lack of civility, or there's just a lack of decorum in wanting to talk about issues. Now, you're an elected official. How do you see it, whether it's locally, statewide, or nationally? How do you see this?
No, I agree with you. I actually was having dinner from one of, like, my best friends from childhood the other night in New York City. And, you know, we both grew up in Morris County. We both went to, you know, Hebrew Day School together. You know, and she's a social worker. She works in Yonkers. And she's very liberal. You know, she told me that, you know, AOC is a role model of hers, and, you know, she very much believes in her. When it comes down to it, I understand, of course, I don't agree with AOC. I think that there's a lot of things that she says that I truly don't agree with, but, you know, I was able to sit down and have a conversation with my friend and tell her this is what I don't agree with, and, you know, but this is, you know, where I'm coming from as a Republican. And my friend, you know, we grew up together, we're family friends, but her view of a Republican is so different than what I am. You know, what I said to her is, you know, as much as I disagree with you, I'm not judging you for your views. Like, your views are part of your life experiences and, you know, how you see the world. And, you know, we don't have to agree, but I can respect you enough for you to have those views. But for you to say to me that, you know, how can I reconcile being a Republican is also a really harsh judgment, because how I see me being a Republican is, you know, fiscally responsible, small government, liberty. And, you know, it's very different than how she likes to think that it is. And so we had a very nice conversation, and she's like, you know what, like, you really, like, opened my mind to things that I never even thought that, you know, Republicans could think about. And, you know, I like to say I'm very similar to, like, you, Fernando, that, you know, I would say I'm a very, you know, center right. I would say, like, I'm very fiscally conservative, but more socially liberal or socially libertarian. And so, like, I'm definitely open-minded to hearing different perspectives and kind of coming to a common place. And, you know, me and my friend are in totally different political areas, but, you know, we were able to have, like, a really nice conversation, and it wasn't hostile at all. And we both agreed that the issue is that the majority of the country can't have dinner and have those very civilized conversations, and that's a problem.
No, it really is, and I think it's something that, as I said, it's really, you know, disheartening because, you know, especially, like, you know, for you as a public official and certainly one that's involved in campaigning and politics, the ability to be able to have a conversation, I think, is so vital, and it's really it's disappointing that we're sort of moving in that direction now where being in the middle seems to be like it's pretty much extinct. And people like you and I think is, you know, the idea of people like yourself and I being able to, you know, engage others, I think, is something that is a lost art. And I'm hoping that it sort of returns because we really need that, I think, in our political discourse. But Sarah, listen, you've been such a great guest tonight. I could have you on for 2 more hours and still not get through everything. But, you know, you've been you've been a great sport tonight. I know you've been under the weather. You've been an absolute champ in, you know, bearing with it tonight. So before I let you go again, I want to thank you coming on tonight. Folks, again, if you have not had a chance, check out Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey at their website, www.fairpropertytaxesforallnewjersey.com. At the top of the website, click on sign up for updates. They'll get their updates in your email. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter, at FairPropTaxNJ. Also like them on Facebook. I appreciate the plugs this week, Sarah, in terms of your appearance today on Politico Direct. But keep up the great work, certainly with what you're doing as deputy mayor and Mendham Township, and keep up the great work with your with the nonprofit here that really is an excellent resource for New Jerseyans. And before I let you go, this is where I give the floor to my guest. For the most part, for an hour, I've been the one asking questions. I've been trying to have a dialogue. But you know what? Now I give my guest the floor. If you want to pick my brain about something or if you want to take me to task on something, guess what? You're in the driver's seat now. You got the floor. What do you got for me? Anything you want to, you know, ask me about or take me to task on, I'm ready for you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I was not prepared for this. That's very exciting. I very much appreciate it. I'm just super curious, like, how you got involved in politics, how you decided to kind of, you know, launch this show, and, you know, your future. Like, do you think you want to run for office? I know we don't know each other very well, but, you know, you seem to have a really good head on your shoulders, and, you know, you're very passionate about this. And so I love when people are really excited about what they're doing, and I would just love to hear more.
Okay, well, I'll try to keep that my answer concise because I can talk on hours about this. But 8 years ago, I ran for the state assembly up here where I live in the 33rd district. I was asked to run as a Republican for an assembly seat. I did not win. I was really proud of my campaign because it was very grassroots. It was sort of a very sort of moderate Republican type. I mean, and when I played, I was grassroots. I was really small time. I mean, like, my dad, who listens every week to the show, was like my treasurer. He was like my manager. I mean, that's how grassroots it was. I mean, but I was really proud of that campaign. I raised what I thought was a good amount of money and ran a very respectable campaign for assembly. I didn't win in a very blue area, which is Hudson County, but I was proud of my efforts. And I think from that moment on, as I was in grad school and I was, you know, trying to finish up and everything, I started doing local media here in Hudson County, Hudson County TV. And then, you know, I sort of, once I started entering full-time academia, which I've been doing for the last few years, I said, you know what, I'm going to focus on being an educator in working at the college level. And I've been happy with it. And I was approached by Insider J 2 years ago. I was at the time, I still am, but on Wednesday nights up here in Hudson County, I host a podcast. It's politically centric as well, but it's more local. It's more about Hudson County issues. And I know the people at Insider. I know Max Pizarro, the editor. I know my boss, Pete Onelia, the GM. And, you know, Pete and I had spoken. He said, listen, I like your show that you do locally. You have a good look like you. You know what you're talking about. You're very middle of the road. You know, you can talk to anybody. You know, let's bring that to Insider NJ. And I tell you, Sarah, I mean, you know, I'm grateful to him, the grand family brawl with Insider, because, you know, they took a chance on me when they didn't have to. And what I've tried to do since then is just reward faith by putting on a good product every week and having different guests on. I mean, I've had State Senator Weinberg on here. I've had State Senator Ronald Rice on. I've had Assemblymen and Women on the show. I've had very liberal activists on the show. I've had Anna Lilia Mejia, if you're familiar with her. She was the former executive director of the Working Families Alliance, and now she's the, I think, the field director for the Bernie campaign. But I've had her. I've had very conservative guests on as well. I've had the chair of the College Republicans in New Jersey, College Democrats. I've had Chairman Steinhardt. I've had everybody under the sun here, and it's something that we have people who blog. We have people that do stuff on YouTube, and that's fine, and that's great. You know, it's great content. But I think that week after week, what I try to do on behalf of Insider is just be educational, be informative, and bring on guests that I know my audience is going to learn with. Obviously, you're a great example of that this week, and every guest I've had. So to really be as concise as I can, it's I'm really happy with what I'm doing. I don't think running for elected office is something I'd want to do again. Again, never say never, but I think that in the direction I'm heading in and the way that this podcast is really growing and my other podcast is growing locally, I think that if you give me my druthers, I'd rather be as impactful a media person as I could be. And, you know, we'll see what goes from there. But, you know, elected office, I don't know. Listen, I'm still young enough to do it, so I don't sweat it. But right now, I think I'm very happy where I'm at with media and what I'm doing. And nobody else is doing this, Sarah. So I think in that regard, I'm sort of happy that I'm trying to sort of be, you know, a breakthrough type of media personality in New Jersey. So we'll find out what happens. But that's where I stand right now, Sarah.
Well, good luck. It sounds, you know, sounds like you're passionate about it, and you know it's very incredible and impressive what you've done. So I'm excited to see what, you know, what's in store for you as well.
Well, listen, Sarah, thank you. That's very kind of you, and as someone who I admire greatly for what you do, not only as a public official but also running a nonprofit and you know really you know fighting a good fight here in New Jersey, which is hard for Republicans. I mean, I know it firsthand. But keep up the good fight. I hope you feel better. Have some tea. Have some chamomile tea if you can at home right now. It really, really works.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna do that. Thank you.
Now,
that's
if you don't
literally
have
what
tea,
I was gonna do.
If you don't have tea, drink some whiskey. You know, the founders in their journals were very. No, I'm serious. The founders were very adamant about the therapeutic benefits of whiskey. So if there's no tea, have a little whiskey, go to bed, and I promise you'll wake up better tomorrow. So thanks
Thank
again
you.
For coming on tonight,
that.
Sarah. Keep up the great work,
okay.
And we'll have to see how you're doing, all right?
Sounds good. Have a good night. Thank you.
Have a good night. Feel better. All right, folks, 9:15 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. And listen, a great program tonight. Again, really listen, when you hear Sarah Nabart's, career path and really what she's done to get to this point, is very impressive on her part. So, you know, all I can say is cheers to her. And certainly we know that the Township of Mendham is in good hands with her, under her leadership, and also the mayor there. So, you know, cheers to her. And certainly, listen, if you haven't had a chance to check out the website for the organization, www.fairpropertytaxesfornewjersey.com, folks, I can't say it enough. It's a wonderful resource. I mean, if you love reading like I do, and you really want to have a sense of these are calculated, where they go, what they're used for, this is a great organization to learn from. So check them out, definitely. Follow them on Twitter, at FairPropTaxNJ, and also like them on Facebook, folks. So believe me, you won't go wrong with them. And again, listen, cheers to Sarah tonight. She's a stand-up lady this evening in really just answering some tough questions about really the political climate in New Jersey, the economic climate, and where we stand right now. Which doesn't look very good. It's becoming more and more difficult to do that here in New Jersey, definitely. All right, folks, again, 9:15 here on the East Coast. Here, I'm about to wrap up shortly. And again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, you can always go to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can do so, again, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. You can do that. Anytime, anywhere. Again, www.insidernj.com/podcasts. and you can do that. And listen, if you have a topic or issue you want to hear about coming up for the show, do me a favor, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. Also, folks, you can follow me directly @your_Fernando. I know it was kind of hard yesterday for a lot of Instagrammers being shut down for well over 10 hours. I know for a lot of people there was a moment of despair there. So I'm glad we all got through it. We all survived the Facebook and Instagram outage of 2019. And we all survived, folks. We all made it. So let's keep the faith there as we all were able to overcome the sort of the tough times for a lot of people yesterday on social media. Also, folks, make sure you like the show on Facebook again, like Politically Direct. We have a following there. And also, check me out on Twitter, @ProfessorFUribe. And again, brand new followers, brand new likes every day. And certainly without you, the fans, this show would not be possible. So again, check it out. Tell your friends about Politically Direct and how much you like it. And also, folks, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the city of New Jersey. Folks, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Once you go on the website, at the very top, click on the subscribe button, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. They'll get delivered conveniently to your inbox each and every morning. So when you're watching TV, watching the cable news shows, maybe watching some of the sports debate shows like I like to watch on Fox Sports 1 or ESPN, and you're scrolling through your smartphone or your tablet, hey, the morning intelligence briefing gives you everything you need to know. They'll give you the 411 about what's going on in the Garden State, about politics and everything else. So again, don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast with the Deputy Mayor of Mendham Township and the President of the Air Property Taxes for New Jersey organization, Ms. Sarah Nabar, again, go to www.insidernj.com/podcasts, and you'll be able to listen to tonight's episode in its entirety later on this evening at the top of the hour. But also all the previous episodes there will be there for you to listen to free of charge. So whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, maybe homework, whatever it is for my students, both past and present, hey, take a break, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget that it is real, it is here, it is Politically Direct. Good night, Mendham Township. All the good people listening tonight to your deputy mayor here on the show. What a great job she did. And, cheers to Sarah Nabar on a great appearance here this evening on Politically Direct. So, folks, have a great weekend. It is St. Patrick's Day weekend. Please party responsibly everywhere you go if you have to. Again, we love your safety. We hope you're able to preserve it. Again, be careful out there. Enjoy. I know some of the college basketball fans this weekend are very excited about March Madness as the conference tournaments take place this weekend as March Madness will begin soon, so we'll find out. And folks, we'll see you next week on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Oh, ain't you sick from above? You know you make my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt, you came to me.
Thank you.